I'd like to call to order the CACBB board meeting today. And so I think, do we need introductions or do we need a roll call?
Need a roll call.
Lord?
I'm fine.
It's a great day today. The 2 feet of snow is up north, so that's good.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Except in Wintergreen, I suppose.
Olivia Branch. Kelly Brown. Here. Andrea Copeland. Athena Eastwood.
Here.
Chris Engel.
Here.
Lisa Jebeck.
Here.
Thank you. Emily Kilroy. B. Lucia Curley.
Here.
Jennifer Lyons.
Here.
Zach Roberts.
Here.
Danny Shea.
Here.
Amber Smith. Brad Yule.
Here.
Juan Diego Wade.
Here.
Darcy Wiegand.
Here.
Serena, would you say your last name for me?
Yassi Silva.
Yassi Silva. Thank you.
And Olivia Branch is here.
Okay. Sorry, Olivia, I called you first.
Okay. All right, so next we have the election of officers. And for chair, I would like to nominate Juan Diego Wade. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Juan, are you?
It's all me now. No, thank you. Well, before we move on,
do we need a roll call?
Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
You guys do a motion and a vote.
Yes. Okay.
So. Yeah. Your last official duty there. So.
We don't need a roll call, correct?
No.
Oh, we don't. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. So, Ms. B, thank you so much for your service as board chair. You know, I came in on this committee. I had a lot to learn, and you helped me out a lot, so I feel comfortable kind of taking over, and we have a little some here for you.
It's from Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Of course. Did you get it?
No, it's from the CACBB.
Oh, from the CACBB.
Yeah.
Well, shall I go ahead?
What?
Oh, my God. Ooh. Oh, a pen? A knife? Oh, no, it's a can opener. I mean, it's a bottle opener.
Come on, but you know what that is.
Yeah. We do have a lot of really good wineries in Albemarle County, so this would be very useful. A great hat, cap, just plastic bottle.
It's a stress ball, but it's in the shape of a stress ball, but it's in the shape of a wine bottle.
I don't have any stress.
You can give it to someone else.
Only just during budget time.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. These are very nice. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you. My pleasure to work with you all.
Look forward to continuing working with you, Ms. B.
And glad to pass the hat.
Yes, ma'am. We're now taking nominations for vice chair of the committee, and I would like to nominate Brad Yule.
Second.
Second? So all in favor, please say yes.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, please say no. So the ayes have it. I look forward to working with you, brother. All right. So the next item on the agenda is establishment of the meeting schedule. So we, the third Monday?
We currently meet the fourth Monday of every other month starting in February from 1 to 3, except for in December when it's the third Monday of the month because of the holiday. So we can change that if we want, but it has been working in large part for the past couple of years.
Is everyone okay with that? We don't have to readopt that, do we? Or
I think we are supposed to establish.
Establish
annually.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So to have the meeting dates, if you could just repeat the meeting dates again. I mean, not specific dates, but the...
February, April, June, August, October. We are the fourth Monday of the month from 1 to 3 at this office, unless otherwise indicated.
You'll need to unlock your iPhone first.
Thanks for the support, Terry. And then in December, it would be the third Monday of the month from 1 to 3.
So, do we need a second for that? So, if
second.
Any suggestions or changes? If not, can I get a motion? I mean, can all in favor please say yes?
Aye.
Yes.
So, I say yes. Do we want aye or
aye?
Yes. So, okay. All opposed, please say no.
No.
All right. So we.
You said,
only say no if you mean it.
I don't mean it.
Okay. Okay, so now the rules and procedures.
We were going to propose what we did last year, which was Robert's Rules of Order for Small Boards. We sent the information about that out to you all ahead of time. It's in other words, a less formal version of Robert's Rules of Order, because that can be very formal seeming, and we're not all that formal of a board. For those of you who have just joined, you may have noticed. So this allows us to have some kinds of rules and procedures, and it's in our bylaws to adopt those at our annual meeting, which is what this is. So we can move forward with deciding if that's something that we want to use or not.
Is everyone comfortable with that, or, you know, it seemed to work? Everyone seemed...
I had to Google what Robert's Rules of Orders were the first meeting I came to, but it does seem like this light version is a little bit more straightforward, right? I don't know what the main differences are between what we used to do versus what we've been doing for the past year, right? But
we weren't following it before.
Okay.
Even though we were adopting Robert's Rules, we were not behaving as if we had adopted it. So it was good that we went to the small board version, because
yeah,
it's mm-hmm. what we're actually doing.
Great.
Lauren's agreeing with me, so we're good.
Yeah.
The attorney says yes.
Okay, so is there a motion to adopt the rules and procedures?
So moved.
Moved, and can I get a second, please? Second. If no other changes or comments, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, please say no. Great. Thank you. And so, usually for the consent agenda, if there's no changes or anything before that, we can just move for adoption of the consent agenda, and which includes the minutes and financial statements. Anyone want to pull something? Or if not, I'll take a motion to approve the consent agenda. Okay, it's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moving properly second. If there's no additional comments, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, please say no. Great. We have the minutes approved and the financial statements. And the next item on the agenda is to approve proposed board job description. And this is something that...
Do you want to stop and recognize the new board members?
Oh, yes.
They can introduce themselves. And in the meantime, if anybody wants a paper copy of the job description, we can pass those around as well.
Yes, actually, and if we could go around, because we have several new board members here, and if we could first go around the table to say our name and our position, and then we'll get the audiences as well, just so we can know who's in the room. And Chris, if you could start off, sir.
Sure. Chris Engel, Director of Economic Development for the City of Charlottesville. Yeah, I should probably not say this, but I might have the dubious distinction of being the longest-serving member of this board.
That's good.
You definitely
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Proud.
Yeah.
B. LaPistol Kirtley, Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
My name is
former chair.
My name is Jen Lyon. I'm the director of marketing and communications at Thomas Jefferson Marchella.
My name is Zach Roberts. I'm the GM at Great Outdoor Provision Company in Barracks Road, Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Danny Shea. I work at Star Hill Presents with the shows at the venues in town and manage the Southern Cafe.
I'm Lisa Jezak. I'm the Community Relations Manager at the Fralin Museum of Art at UVA.
Darcy Wigand, also at University of Virginia in the Southern.
My name is Dorina Yassisova. I'm the General Manager at the Residence in Charlottesville downtown.
Athena Eastwood, I'm the owner of Eastwood Farm and Winery in Charlottesville.
Brad Yule, I am part of a group that manages Grit Coffee, Trailbridge Brewing, and the Wool Factory here in town under the name Bread and Table.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly Brown, General Manager at the Kimpton Forum Hotel.
Wanda Eagle Wade, Mayor of the great city of Charlottesville.
Olivia Branch, worked in hospitality in various ways. First time.
I think everyone
knows me, and I'm not on the board, but I work for you all, so I'm excited to have everybody participating in here today. Thank you.
I don't know, we have staff, and, you know, if others want to introduce themselves.
Sure. Lauren, do you want to go and say
your... My name is Lauren Bodin. I'm a senior assistant county attorney. I work in the county attorney's office. The county attorney's office is legal counsel to this board.
I'm Roy Van Dorn, just a member of the hospitality industry.
My turn. Hi, I'm Anna Whitlow. I'm the Director of Marketing and PRS for the CACBB.
I'm Cassie Ivey, Director of Visitor and Community Engagement.
I'm Rudy Vaughn. I'm the Management Analyst.
Great. Thank you all so much. We'll definitely get to know each other over the meetings over the next year or so. The next item on the agenda is a job description, which the new board members and maybe some of the existing board members might appreciate. This is something that I've been working on with Courtney, I guess over the last few months. She asked if anyone wanted to review this, and I think I'm the only one must have volunteered for it, because I've been on a lot of boards over the last 30 years in this community, and many of them don't have this, and sometimes you get into the role and like, what am I supposed to do? How do I do this? And this is something that I think we had some existing things, and then I, you know, got some information from some other boards and kind of put it together. So this is kind of some things that, you know, working with Courtney that I think can help describe and help you fit into your job. It's not set in concrete. If you looked it over and saw some things that maybe should be added or should be taken off or whatever, it's, you know, I'm fine with it. We're just here for discussion, and I think everyone got it ahead of time. So maybe if you want to, we can open it up for discussion now if you would like. If not, is this something we're going to adopt, or we just kind of have, you know?
We don't have to adopt it today if there's a lot of discussion about it or if people aren't comfortable with doing that, but I'd like to either adopt it today or at the next meeting, depending on what the board would like to do.
Well, why don't we give you time to look it over so now that you kind of know the purpose of it, and maybe at the next meeting or future meeting we will adopt it, but if you have some questions or some comments or whatever, you can send it in so that we can have time to kind of research it, and we'll put it on the agenda for the next meeting too if we could do that. Does that sound cool with everyone? We'll do that?
Good.
Thank you.
I think maybe like an annual review of the vision.
So. Yeah. Great. We're going on to the next item on the agenda. It's the presentation of the FY27 budget. And Courtney, have you down for that?
Yes, sir. So this is just a draft of the budget. We are not looking for approval of the budget today. So this is our opportunity as the board for you all to be familiar with what's there, give us any kind of recommendations that you'd like for us to be able to make. Our bylaws say that by May 1st, we need to have adopted a budget. Our next board meeting is at the end of April. That doesn't give us a lot of time to make edits. Ideally, we capture whatever feedback you have today, but if you have feedback upon further reflection, please reach out to us, hopefully in the next week or two, so that we can make those adjustments. A lot of what is in our budget is because the county has said X, Y, and Z, and a lot of those things we pay the county for that kind of support as our fiscal agent. So some things I might say today, I appreciate your feedback, but it's not open to this board's discretion how we use that budget. So if you have any questions about what you all have influence over and what you don't as we go through, I'll try and have that at the forefront of my mind, but please feel free to ask questions. Here is the proposed budget from a revenue standpoint. The contributions from the city and the county are a fixed percentage of what comes in for the transient occupancy tax. If you want to know more about that, and you weren't part of the December board meeting, feel free to go back and listen to the December board meeting where it's discussed in further detail. But that's a fixed percentage that comes to our budget. We sell advertising on our website, and we typically sell about $40,000 worth of advertising on our website. We have that line is there. And then the interest payment is something that the county invests all of the funds that are under their purview and receives interest. And so the portion of the interest payment that we anticipate based on what they said was $18,000. But we didn't want to overestimate that, and so we have put in $15,000 for next year. The way that we get access to our budget is that we have to ask for appropriation from the Board of Supervisors, who then have to appropriate it. So if it's in our budget, then we can get access to it. If it's not appropriated by the Board of Supervisors, we don't have direct access to it. So it just came to my attention in the past month or so that this is something that we should be having come to our budget, and this is the proposed way of getting access to those funds. Any questions about revenues? All right. Here are the expenditure details for the salaries. This board doesn't really have much say over much of this. We participated through the county in a compensation and classification study, the results of which are not fully known, but not anticipated to have any kind of adjustments made for our salaries for this year. We have budgeted a 3% increase because that's usually around the average of what the Board of Supervisors designates to county employees, and we are county employees under that definition. And part-time is what we put aside for anybody who we might want to bring on as an intern. We don't usually use much of that budget, but we did have a data science intern this past summer who did use that, so we like to budget for it. Anything that is not spent here goes into advertising. So any overage that we anticipate will go into the advertising line item.
And the health insurance is just a combination of those two lines? Right?
Yeah, so these are all different codes under how the county does things, but they, based on everybody on the team's needs with their health insurance and how the county buys their health insurance, that's how we get those numbers. Any other questions? Okay. Here is our promotional budget. We, as I said, we put everything default into advertising and marketing. That's the biggest single line in our budget. That it has a bit of a breakdown on a further slide, so if you have questions about how we spend that money, we'll be getting to that. We don't typically use $30,000 in research, but we use about half of that. If we decide that as a board we want to research something, this allows us to have the opportunity to have that already budgeted without having to reallocate. But again, if we don't use all of it, it'll go into advertising. The printing cost is going down significantly next year because we just printed our visitor guide and we printed 2 years worth in an effort to save cost. So half of that is being housed at the printers and half of it is either here or already out. I saw it in Williamsburg on Friday. postage costs continue to increase, so we've added a little bit there. Our non-local travel, airlines and hotel costs continue to rise, so we are not anticipating more non-local travel. It's just trying to get an accurate estimate. This is mostly for trade show travel, dues and subscriptions for the kinds of memberships that we belong to, and then the vehicle expenditures are related to our mobile visitor centers. We don't typically spend that much either, but you never know. So you want to make sure that if you have to spend something on the vehicles, that we have something budgeted for them. Any questions there?
And once again, anything you don't spend goes into advertising.
Yes. So as we wrap up, starting really April 1st, we take a hard look at the budget and what do we have left, and we push out advertising, make advertising buys with whatever we aren't spending. So that's, we really have to spend it largely by June 1st to have it end with the budget cycle and having their fiscal year end at the end of June. That doesn't mean that if it's advertising, that it's all done. We're done advertising June 1st, it's that it's purchased by then, and then it goes through the end of the fiscal year. Okay. I am not going to go through all of these because I don't think it's that interesting to everybody. Does anybody have any questions about any of the operational costs that we have up here? Yeah, because we've been doing Tourism for All, we had been allocating that under promotion and thought it's more fiscally responsible to put it under that line item instead. Yeah.
Is the lease building rent, is that a function of an escalator in the lease plus utilities?
Yes.
Utilities live in that line too?
Yes. We haven't typically been using that line item, and upon further examination, we didn't think that we needed that full amount there. That is just the copying machine at this point. Rory, is that the Pitney Bowes machine too? Machinery and equipment?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. So we have a mailing machine that we use for our visitor guides primarily when we put them out, and that allows us to put postage directly onto those. So if we have, you know, an extra couple of brochures, it's sensitive to the weight of it and can put it out, and we can load it there, and then we have a copier that we use too. Yes.
Question: I noticed you more than doubled your travel meals.
Yes, that's what Olivia just asked about. That is the Tourism for All budget. We had been putting that under promotional, but we thought it was more fiscally responsible to put it under our meals budget. That's more transparent.
Sorry, I didn't hear your question, Olivia.
Oh, you're good. Anything else? We can come back to it if something occurs to you. All right. And then this is a breakdown of the advertising line item, so you all have an idea of what's in there. We will be creating promotional items as needed, as opposed to storing a bunch of them, because it makes a lot more sense for the space that we have. So we plan on spending more there than we maybe had in years past. It was kind of ebbed and flowed. Website maintenance is outside of the maintenance that we pay to just house the website through Tempest, which is our provider. Any questions about this breakdown?
Is this the proposed breakdown, or is this what it had been?
This is proposed, yes. So this takes into account that we have a website redesign that this board approved as part of the strategic plan in year two. So there's a little bit more investment, there's more investment in the website than we usually have to follow the strategic plan that we have. Can you speak for me? I'm sorry, Olivia.
Which green is the 117,000? I just can't
quite
tell the difference.
That's PR. That's got to be PR, right?
Okay.
Yes. No, that's a good question. So this is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marketing and
college.
Marketing
down here.
Yeah. The subscription, sorry.
What is engagement and destination development?
That is a fund that supports our destination development team so that they can connect with partners and create partnerships inside the community to generate additional lures to our destination. Yeah.
But inside the community?
We partner inside the community
yeah.
to bring people from outside the community in. Yeah. So, like, working with Monticello Wine Trail on how to do tourism promotion is part of that. Okay. All right. Any questions from there? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Hi, everyone.
We're going to talk about FOIA and COIA today. Those are acronyms for two really important acts that you should know something about as board members. So we're going to start with FOIA. Courtney, if you'll advance to the next slide. FOIA, so there's a federal FOIA law and there's a Virginia FOIA law. We're going to talk about the Virginia one today, but Vietnam, Watergate. Citizens' trust in their government is at an all-time low. Things are not going well. They put in place these Freedom of Information Act laws. The purpose of these laws was to increase government transparency, which didn't exist prior to the implementation of these two of these acts. And so, the purpose of I'm just putting you in the time frame so you kind of understand. I don't need you to understand everything about FOIA, but just like if you know the history of it, you'll probably. In your mind about like, hey, this is a place where we need to be transparent, or this is a place where the public needs access to records. FOIA requires that all meetings of public bodies be public. You are a public body, so all of your meetings need to be public. Reason being, government affairs are not to be conducted in secrecy, and the basis for that is that the public is the beneficiary of anything a government does. Can you advance to the next slide, Courtney? A public body is any governing board, bureau, commission, district, or agency of the locality. You are a public body because you are a board that is a joint powers exercised by two localities. So you're a special board, but you're still a public body. And so go ahead, Courtney, to the next slide. So you're definitely a public body. We have kind of put together seven principles. It's not everything in FOIA, but it's some good guidelines for you. A meeting exists when three or more members of a public body are physically assembled for the purpose of conducting business. So if the three of you want to leave this meeting and go get some drinks, that's fine. Don't talk about CACVB business, and it's fine. If you talk about CACVB business, well, unfortunately, you've started a public meeting at a bar. Please don't do that, right? And so three or more of you physically assembled for the purpose of conducting business. If you can remember that, and I'm sure all of you will, like, see each other at industry events or conferences or things, don't talk about CACVB business there. Talk about whatever else you're there to do. That's fine, and we'll all be okay, all right? If three or more members of the public body are assembled, but it's not for the purpose of conducting business, you're fine, but just don't slip into that conversation. Electronic communications, I've got a separate slide about electronic communications, but that's where it can get kind of tricky, because if three or more of you are on an email and you start talking about public business, email's contemporaneous, right? We all know texting and email can be done instantaneously today. You can accidentally create a public meeting by emailing back and forth too quickly with each other, right? So that's a real sticky area. Just be really thoughtful and careful about that.
That is why that when we send out communications, we BCC you all. It's not because we're trying to be mysterious about who the email is going to. It's so that we don't prompt this conversation. If that's something that you would like increased transparency on who we're sending emails to and you'd like to see that, then we have to rely on you all to make sure that you don't reply all so that we're not triggering this.
And it happens a lot. Even though you say, I won't reply all, somebody does. And it's happened with this board specifically.
And we had a board member who couldn't be here today who had said that they didn't like the way that we were BCCing folks, so I'm doing my due diligence of representing that board member.
And that's a fair point, but it is my advice to Courtney that she BCC you. So if you don't like it, we can talk about it, but that was my advice.
So if it happens, would the email thread have to be made public?
Yeah, the email thread would have to be made public, and we would have already violated FOIA because obviously you did not notice your emails at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So the violation occurs.
It is a violation, it's not just a meeting.
Exactly. We can like try to fix it by posting the emails and being like, this accidentally happened, but we violated the email.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, email, hate it. Would love to turn it off, but I'm not in charge. So public meetings are the rule, closed meetings are the exception. We very rarely go into closed meeting with this board. It's almost always for Courtney's annual review, but in the event you need like legal counsel or things like that, we can go into closed meeting, but generally everything's public. There has to be an express exemption that applies before we can go into closed session. And here is a fun, tricky thing, which is a meeting can be established under FOIA even though a quorum is not established. But if a quorum is not established, the only action the public body may take is to adjourn the meeting. But it seems a little annoying that if you don't have a quorum and all you're going to do is adjourn the meeting, you could also potentially violate FOIA even without having a quorum. So that's really annoying, but that is what it is. So anyway, just be aware of that. If we come one day and there's not a quorum, we're going to just cancel that meeting, essentially.
Quorum is 8 of 15 of us, and we've reached quorum every time, so it's not a huge concern.
Yeah.
So just that way.
Next slide, Courtney. Okay, and so this is my email slide that we talked about, but the problem with the email specifically, too, is that there's been no clear guidance about how close in time communications have to be considered simultaneous. There's some case law that says 4 hours are not simultaneous, but like, please don't send me in front of a judge to defend 3 hours and 30 minutes. Like, that's not a good place to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just not, it's not how we should be doing things. It's not how we should be conducting business for the public, and it's not a position I particularly want to take in front of our judges and get yelled at. So please don't do that to me. Distributing information from staff to the public body or among public body members is permitted. Again, you just have to stay away from that instantaneous or contemporaneous communication. Okay? So like if Courtney sends you something and then one of you replies one day and then one replies the next day, that's not contemporaneous, right? That's you discussing issues with staff. That's okay. We're not trying to stop that communication. We're just trying to make sure it's not happening instantaneously.
What happens when if you have a text and you have, like, I communicate vis-a-vis text with Courtney.
So one-on-one is fine.
Right. But let's say 5 hours later,
I
include Chris on that text.
Two. You're okay so far?
Actually, just at one, because I am not a board member.
Yeah.
Okay. Juan Diego.
Yeah.
So if you create a group chat with you, Courtney, Juan, and Chris, please don't do that.
Right. But, I mean, can I add Chris afterwards, like send him that text where Juan and I texted, and then 5 hours later I send a copy of that text to Chris for his information?
Yes.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's
communicating amongst each other or communicating with us. And I don't want you to not feel like you can't email back and forth with each other. You can. Like, if Brad and Athena want to talk about, we don't like this thing that Courtney did, and we don't like this plan, and the logo, right? Logo all over again. You don't like the logo, and this is your thought on the logo, blah, blah, blah. You go back and forth about it. That's fine. As long as you don't add a third person to that email, that's okay, right? And then if you guys find that, Telly agrees with you about the logo, and then you forward her that email, that's fine. Again, as long as you don't start talking three people on the email, okay? Generally, I think the best practice that you all can do, because not a lot of you are government employees, so you don't spend a lot of time in FOIA and COIA every day, is you should try to correspond one-on-one with Courtney. And if you want to talk to each other, you should pick up the phone and call each other.
I was going to say, picking up the phone is the best way. They cannot FOIA your phone calls.
It gives you the ability to talk honestly, and it also guarantees that there ought to only be one person on the other end of that phone call, and you're not running into these electronic communication issues. And that's why staff is careful with their communications to you to only send you like things that you really need, like here's a document or here's the board packet or whatever, and we'll keep in touch with you and contact you, but we'll try to set up meetings or have phone calls with you so that we're not putting any of you in a position where you might accidentally violate FOIA. Does that make sense?
If there's something that any of you want to talk about in a larger conversation, you are always welcome to propose that we add it to the agenda of a board meeting. that we have a special meeting about it, or that we create a committee around it. The committees are still subject to FOIA,
mm-hmm.
But those are avenues for having discussions that we wouldn't typically have in the boardroom if you all didn't propose that we do. So I just wanted to give you options in case.
Staff generally prepares the agenda for almost every board I work for, but that doesn't mean you're not allowed to add things to the agenda, and that is the place to handle these discussions, is in public where the public can come to these meetings, right? For closed meetings, that's a meeting where the public is excluded. There is an entire code section about it. It's got a bunch of exemptions, but you have to fall under one of the specific exemptions to go into closed meeting. The most common ones are going to be discuss and consider personnel matters, any actions involving real property probably, or negotiating the investment of public funds, or to talk to yours truly. And so those are the most common closed meeting exemptions. Even if you go in a closed meeting, and when we go in a closed meeting, I will advise you about the rules in closed meeting, but even when you go in a closed meeting, if you come to some idea or consensus in that closed meeting and you want to do something about it, then we still have to come out of closed meeting and take that vote publicly on what you're going to do. Does that make sense? Okay, next slide.
You can't take a vote in closed meeting.
Right. Quorums, so as Courtney said, you have a quorum of 8. Unless there are 8 people here to vote and take action, this public body has taken no action, okay? So if there's no quorum, you are not a functioning public body yet. And so anyway, that's just important to keep in mind about quorum. Next slide. Records are the other big piece of FOIA. For most of you, it's probably going to be meetings because this is going to be the primary portion of your job. But records, Courtney and her staff and me and all of us are creating a lot of public records, too. They're also potentially subject to FOIA. All records in the possession of the public body are presumed to be public records. Many types of records are public records, so drafts, unreleased documents, handwritten notes. The notes you take on a post-it next to your telephone could be a public record, okay? Emails, the vast majority of them are emails. Documents when received from the public in confidence or when they come into the possession of the public body. We contract with a lot of vendors. The things that our vendors make for us become public records if we can go get them from our vendors. Does that make sense? So, I mean, really, kind of everything is a public record. You should think of everything as a public record. All the notes and the work that you do here is a public record, so keep it. Public records, they have to exist to be subject to FOIA, which is to say we don't have to create records. So if we get a FOIA request and it asks for something and we don't have a record that speaks to that, we don't actually actively have to go make anything, so that's nice, but that's really our only kind of helpful piece of this records statute. Some public records are exempt from mandatory disclosure. It doesn't mean they're not a public record. It just means they don't have to potentially be disclosed. I mean, the most common records that probably fit that exemption are my work, which is anything that's work product created by the attorneys, are not subject, they're exempt from FOIA. Public records are open to inspection and copying during regular office hours, and when we receive a FOIA request, a public body is required to respond in 5 working days. And so this is the big thing that I want to make you aware of, is the 5 working days. If you get a request from the public for something, that needs to be turned over to staff that day. If you are on vacation, call your employee and have them forward it to Courtney and to staff, okay? Because we only get 5 days to respond. Do not kneecap us by not sending us that FOIA as soon as you get it. We will work through it in 5 working days. I don't expect all of you to be FOIA experts such that you're going to be responding to these FOIA requests. I just want you to know when you get them to send them to us, and we'll deal with it. We will help you. That is what staff is here for. That's what the county attorney's office is here for. We will get the response out. Just get it to us, and please give us those full 5 days, because some of these responses are really big and they're going to take us a lot of time to get together, and 5 days is not a lot of time.
So what if you are away and can't, you don't know that that's sitting on your inbox?
Yeah,
right.
So that, right. My advice is always to keep an out of office on, because if your out of office says contact this person instead and they don't contact that person, the argument we would take to court is our 5 days didn't start because they didn't contact that second backup person. Our 5 days started when Andrea got back in the office. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So
That's what we do in our office. That's what we do for everybody in the county. There's a lot of departments have different FOIA officers. All of them keep out of offices on when they're out all the time, that have a second person that takes up those FOIA responsibilities.
Do you do that for the board also?
Yeah.
When we travel overseas?
I think, I don't know what you do, Bea, but you should do it.
What's an example of a request that might, or...
Yeah.
Maybe historically has come to someone.
Yeah, so the county gets a lot of FOIAs, different FOIAs every single day, but I think the big things that would come in is like, probably for you guys, is probably like budget, how are you spending the money? We've gotten requests for the TOT amount, how is the TOT calculated, how is it being spent, what is, so there's been a lot of records related to that. I mean, generally, like, right, the police department has a FOIA officer who gets a bajillion FOIAs every day. It ranges from body cam to police reports to give me your org chart. There was a big FOIA that came in and it hit every locality in the state that was for the entire roster of every sheriff's office in every county. It's a lot of work, right? A friend I worked with, who is also a local government attorney, FOIA'd a locality to figure out what the attorney's salaries were so they knew what to ask for in negotiations for a new job, right? Like, so that's all public record. So it could be really anything. Mm-hmm. Courtney doesn't get a ton of FOIAs here at CACBB, but we've not gotten zero. We've gotten them in the past. So
yeah.
I just want you to be aware that it exists. And basically, if a member of the public is asking you for something, I don't want you to figure out on your own. I want you to exercise caution and just ask me. I'm never going to be mad if you call me up and say, Lauren, this weird email came or this weird ask came from somebody. And I'll say, great, Brad, let's work through it. And I'll help you figure out if it's a FOIA or not. I just don't want to put you in a position where you don't know what to do or where to refer it.
And we usually treat any request from the public as if it were a FOIA request, so we try to be very responsive to any questions that our community has to ask.
And we also try to be proactive. They keep all the meeting minutes and the agendas online on the website so that we can be in front of some of what the more regular requests would be, which is like, when did you talk about this, or what meeting did you address this, right? So here are my suggestions for managing emails and other public records. Retain all your CACVV-related emails. You can make a folder in your inbox and you can make a command that dumps all of your CACVB emails in that folder immediately and just leave them there. Don't delete them. Inform the county attorney's office, which would be me in this case if you receive a request for public records, but if it doesn't get to me, it gets to Courtney or Rory, that's fine too. Literally any county staff member will do just fine. They all know to then bother me. And then anticipate any email that you send pertaining to CACV business will be disclosed to the public.
I have just a practical question.
Yeah.
Taking notes in
yeah.
a meeting.
Yeah.
I had been assuming that if we take notes in a meeting, we need to keep them
written. Yes, ma'am.
Although the way that last slide was drafted, it says a public record if it's retained. That's a little circular. But so if I take notes and then I throw crunch it up and throw it in the dumpster when I get home.
Yes, you've destroyed a public record. Please don't do that.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that applies that
yes.
it's only a public record if it's retained.
Yeah. So we have to retain them for a certain amount of time, and then we can destroy them.
Okay.
But yeah, you should keep them, and if it's easier to just scan them in and email them to yourself after the board meeting and
yeah.
you want to just put it all in your email, that's fine. Then you could throw out the original. Does that make sense? Because you
yeah.
would still have it
yeah.
and it would exist in another form.
That's great. And then what if we bring notes in? Because we don't want to forget to mention two things. The notes we bring in, but
mm-hmm.
if we didn't take any notes while
mm-hmm.
we're here, need to retain those?
Yeah, if you bring notes in, that would still be related to your work on public business. So same thing, you could do that as an email to yourself and just keep it in your email. Wherever you decide you want to keep your stuff, just
okay.
dump it all
yeah.
there.
I think that's helpful because I honestly think that, you know, it can hamper effective representation on the board depending on your learning style if you can't take notes.
Totally.
But I think we maybe shouldn't be afraid to
absolutely
take notes,
not. Yeah.
We just have to scan them and preserve them.
I
tend to not take them because
yeah.
it felt a little gray, but
yeah.
I would actually prefer... I learn better when I'm...
Yeah, no worries. I don't want to stop anybody from doing things the way that's going to work best for them. I just want you to be aware of the pros and cons, right? And then for you, the pro is you're going to remember it a lot better. The con is now you have to scan it in and put it in a folder on your computer or whatever, or
and
keep that notebook. I need to go look what our retention schedule is for...
We were thinking it was around 3 years.
Recently, right? Yeah.
at the end of a 3-year term.
I wouldn't want to stay. Well, so it's going to be 3 years from the end of your last day of your term. Yeah.
Or 3 years when it's done.
Right. So the first. Let's say you started in 20. You served from 2020 to 2023. That first year you served, 2020. Those notes are going to get destroyed in 2023, or I guess the last day of 23, maybe the first day of 24. Your notes from 21, same thing. Last day of 24, right? And so it's going to rotate depending on the day of the document.
I'm very compliant. I have hundreds of notes.
and bonfires. I know.
And the other thing you could do is at the end of your term of service, you could say, Courtney, here are all my emails, and here's my folder where I kept my CACVV documents, and I'm dumping it with staff, and that's okay too, and they'll destroy it on the record retention schedule, so you don't have to keep track of it yourself if that makes
Happy
you
too.
More comfortable. Okay, sorry. COIA, Conflicts of Interest Act. Next slide, Courtney. The purpose of the act is to assure citizens that the judgment of public officers and employees will not be compromised or affected by inappropriate conflicts. Most conflicts of interest arise when an officer or employee has a personal interest in a transaction. Again, this is a big code section. There's a lot in it. I don't know, probably about 70% of them live in this area of do you have a personal interest in a transaction. Disclosure and disqualification, which would be to say, hey, I think I have a conflict and I'm going to disqualify myself from any vote on this. You can think of it the same as a judge recusing themselves from a case that they might have an interest in. The transaction applies solely to the property or business in which the public official has a personal interest. I'm trying to think. So an example of this is like we have a planning commission here in Albemarle County. They make decisions on certain planning decisions. A lot of people who end up serving in that on that planning commission have been or are real estate developers at some point in time, which is why they know a lot about planning and sometimes sit on that board. But they also probably own companies that are trying to buy property and potentially change planning decisions, right? And so if one of their companies was in front of that board, they would need to recuse themselves because they would have an interest in that transaction. That's just kind of a basic example. The other thing you can do is disclose but not disqualify. And so if you need to disclose that you're a member of the business profession or occupation, but you can participate fairly objectively and in the public interest, this is a pretty easy way to get out of a conflict is to say, I'm disclosing it and I'm not going to make any decisions about it. This is a finer line. It's a little stickier. And so this is one we would want to be a little more careful with, to disclose but not disqualify. And so this one's going to be a longer conversation than this one. But these are kind of your options, which are disclose and disqualify and disclose but not disqualify. Personal interest in a transaction, again, I said most of the conflicts arise under that section of the code, personal interest in a transaction. An officer or employee has a personal interest if he or she or a member of his or her immediate family has a minimum $5,000, which could be annual wages or income, interest, or a 3% equity interest in either a business or property, and immediate family means a spouse or any other person who resides in the same household and who is a dependent of the officer or employee. And so if you've got a family business, this is probably the area that you want to be careful about, and we can talk through it. Business or property is either the subject of the transaction or may reasonably foresee a direct or indirect benefit or detriment as a result of the action being considered. And so, like I said, most of these arise under that personal interest in a transaction section, so we spent a little extra time on that slide to give you some more language from the actual definition there. You can go to the next slide, Courtney. The main thing you need to do is if you have some kind of interest in a transaction is, of course, call our office and we will help you work through the disclosure and disqualification. Our office's policy is that we always use the written form for disclosure. So there's like a form you can use, and we always are going to advise you to use that disclosure form. Specifically, we do not take disclosures over email. We do not take disclosures over the phone. You will need to be writing that down on a form. And so that's just a good thing to keep in mind. I think we're okay, Courtney. You can go to the next slide. I feel like I covered that already. You also cannot accept gifts or other related to prohibited conduct. So please don't solicit or accept money or anything of value for your services performed on this board. Seems pretty clear that'd be a bribe, but I'm just saying it out loud. Please don't do that. please don't offer or accept any money or things of value in consideration for obtaining employment, appointment, or promotion of any person within any governmental agency or advisory agency. So, like, don't accept any money for a promotion for somebody on Courtney's staff. That would be a very bad idea. Any money or things of value for using your public position to obtain a contract for any person or business with this governmental advisory agency or, frankly, the county or the city. Do not use for his or her economic benefit or that of another party any confidential information that is acquired in your public position here. You're not going to be exposed to a ton of confidential information in this position, but still, please don't use anything for somebody else's economic benefit. Please don't accept any money, loan, or gift, favor, service, or business or professional opportunity that tends to influence the officer in the performance of your duties. So basically, if anybody's offering you anything because you're on the CACVB board, that's going to be a big red flag to give me a call, okay? Because something's going on there that shouldn't be going on. Accept any business or professional opportunity when they know there's a reasonable likelihood that the opportunity is being afforded to influence you in the performance of your duties, and don't accept any honoraria for any appearance, speech, or article in which you provide expertise related to the performance of your official duties. I don't think this one's going to come up as much, but these ones are kind of just basically the like, hey, don't accept money or influence type of things. I think it'll be obvious if it ever happens to you, but if it does, just call. That's what we're here for. The other thing to think about is you shouldn't have a personal interest in any contracts with the governing body or governing agency that is a part of the local government. So basically, I know a lot of you run businesses. If your businesses are getting involved in anything with the city or the county or the CACVB, that's going to be the time that you need to give us a call, and we're going to work through what's going on, which may include that disclosure, and it may include that disclosure and disqualification. I don't think it's happened yet, but if it does come up and you want to enter some government contract, give me a call. Okay.
So even in, does that, what if the county or the city wanted to host some kind of event at the hotel?
Yeah, we should probably talk about that. I don't think it's a no, but
okay.
The other thing to think about with conflicts of interest is if a conflict of interest might exist, you should call our office, and we may also then send you up High Street to the Commonwealth's attorney or the Virginia Conflict of Interest and Ethics Advisory Council, which I all sent you via email when you started, and I'm sure, as always, you've read my emails and gone through all the links. So it's going to be us, the Commonwealth's attorney, and the Virginia COIA Council that would provide any opinions about a conflict of interest. And the main reason we probably would send you to the Commonwealth Attorney's Office is if we think you have a conflict of interest is because if they provide a written opinion that says this is not a conflict, you can use that as an affirmative defense to any prosecution under the Conflict of Interest Act, right? Similarly, if they provide you an opinion that says we think this is a conflict and then you do it anyway, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be prosecuted for that crime. So they're a good, easy stop to answer that question. The only thing I would note, too, is that if we need to take one of these routes to go to the Commonwealth or to the COIA Council, that takes some time. That can take a couple months to get an opinion from them. So full, honest, open disclosure as soon as possible is the best way for me, help me help you. Anyway, provide us with full written disclosure of facts, follow the written opinion provided by the attorney, and then, of course, there are penalties, including criminal violations, if you violate COIA. So, same thing for FOIA. So that's my happy ending note. Don't accept bribes. Please keep your records. And don't hang out more than three of you.
I know this shouldn't matter, but what's the meaning of the picture?
There's a fox with the dogs.
Yeah.
Fox hunt. She's hiding in there. Yeah. Totally can't see in
time. Gotcha.
So there you go.
Actually, he has where he can.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what I got. That's the last slide recording.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so Do you have any FOIA questions? I know this is fun, really exciting, light topic, but always feel free to call our office. That's what we're here for. We're here to help you and make sure nobody violates COIA or FOIA.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It was great.
And you did it within the half hour as requested, so well done. Thank you. I am going to get started with the director's report. So for those of you who are unfamiliar, this is how we structure what we've been up to, and it looks like we're going to have plenty of time today to go through it, which is great. So highlights of the past couple of months, I summarized some local tourism industry meetings as well as some at the state level, and some of them are repeated later on, so I won't go into those, but I served on the Arts Council, that steering committee, so that is wrapped up and a recommendation is forthcoming. That was focused on Charlottesville, but Albemarle County and the greater area where we're considered. So look forward to seeing the next steps of those of that report, but I won't be involved moving forward. We met with the Charlottesville Airport to discuss how we can collaborate with them closer. The airport can't do destination marketing. They can't tell people to come here, but they can tell locals to use the airport. right?
Yeah.
So we should be working closer together as they want to pursue other markets, but I've invited Jason Birch to come in to our next board meeting to give you all an update on that. Since we hadn't established a meeting schedule, I couldn't give him the firm date, but we'll follow up with him. He'll also give a short version of it tomorrow. And I met with several of you talking about what it means to be join the CACVB board, so thank you for taking the time to do that. And we also had our crisis communications plan reviewed, and that is in process from our two board members, so thank you guys for doing that. And then thank you to Bea and Juan Diego for speaking to our National Park Service Chesapeake Gateway partner meeting in the event space at the Dairy Market. Either of you want to say anything about that group or that event?
Yeah. So I was really surprised it had parks representatives from New York to North Carolina, and they were, here, and they were, I guess the conference was at DoubleTree.
It was at the Omni.
The Omni.
Yeah.
But they were having dinner at, meeting kind of, I guess, a little bit more unofficially at the Dairy Market. So they would go upstairs, and they would grab dinner from different places and come downstairs, and Ms. B and I were able to give them a welcome to the community, just kind of say a little bit about the community welcoming them there. So it was nice. I'd never done anything quite like that, in that environment. So it was good.
Thank you both. And we'll talk a little bit more about what my team did while they were in town as we progress. And then I think one of our biggest things that we did on the local level was collaborate with the city and county emergency services during the snowstorm to give them daily information about hotel availability. Thank you to my two hoteliers in the room. It was something that the county crisis communications person said that she had never had the ability to do before, and so it was a huge thing for her to be able to know where she could house people in the event of an emergency. So that was a great opportunity for us. I appreciate everybody's time. We did a downtown mall ambassador training, so the ambassadors are on. There are six of them. They got started at the beginning of February?
Yep, February 1.
And so we, Cassie specifically, designed a training for them to get to know the region and regional assets and the tourism industry a lot better so that as people come downtown, they can make recommendations outside of the downtown mall if something, if the downtown mall isn't meeting the need on their question. So we're looking forward to seeing how that moves forward. I also met with the county IT and HR departments to determine if we had the policies in place to go after our accreditation through Destinations International. That is something that's in our strategic plan, and so I've been putting the pieces together. If they weren't able to help us with that, that may have been a disqualifier for us. So I wanted to start with the things that we rely on from the county so that we're good there. I think I'll just keep going from there. Coming soon, as we discussed earlier, our April board meeting will need to pass the budget, so anything that you want asked, please try to do that ahead of time unless you think that it is deserving of a full board conversation. We will plan in June to go in depth into our first year of results from our strategic plan. So as a reminder, we officially started our three-year strategic plan on July 1st. So at the end of June, we'll be nearly done, days away from being done with our first year. So we'll give you all an overview of what we were able to accomplish with that first year, where we think we're going, and any hurdles that we see to completion, and there might be a couple of them, so we will let you know at that time. You'll also get to hear from Cassie and Anna directly about their team's work. Our Tourism for All conference is tomorrow. It is something that our industry really celebrates. It's a time for all of them to get together, to get to know each other, and to get updates from us and interact. So I'm really looking forward to that. We also have a meeting this week with Monticello staff to talk about civic season and collaboration for the semi-quincentennial. Rolls right off the tongue. And then we'll be holding our retreat the spring as our team so that we are able to collaborate better and more efficiently with each other. And we've been having a series of Destination 20 plus 45 events. Those are held here, so we have a limited number of folks who can participate. I think it's 20 people? 25 people. We've done one on the engagement team, we've done one on the rebrand, and the one coming up on March 25th is a sales initiative, which will be led by Teresa Lamb. And after that, we have invited our directors of sales from hotels to come in and continue the conversation with us about how we can be closer collaborators. All right, so strategic plan year one, I'm not going to go through all of these slides right here, but our updates on amplifying visitor experiences is we are getting our mobile visitor centers rewrapped with the new branding. These are based on best practices that our team has looked into for the past couple of years on what a vehicle needs to operate efficiently, and so we have our logo, but we also have information on it and the way that it's displayed so that we are eye-catching, but also delivering visitor information. So we should have one vehicle back today, and we'll debut it at the Tourism for All conference tomorrow. So we're excited. The other vehicle is on its way there to get rewrapped. And then that's all there. I've mentioned Tourism for All a couple of times, but we'll just end that with we are at 100% capacity, so we're really excited. We have 8 cohorts graduating. I know we've mentioned Zach a couple of times graduating tomorrow. Thank you. Lisa graduated last year, so I'm happy that we are continuing to build our crew of cohort graduates. We will also be talking more about our accessibility efforts tomorrow, but at the Virginia Association of Museum Conference on accessibility coming up this spring. Our Founding Footprints podcast series is done. All of the episodes are released. We have probably, I'm going to say, 900 total listens because this was as of February 1st. Was nearly at 900. That's really a strong showing, especially because we aren't putting advertising dollars behind making sure that people are hearing this. So an organic reach of nearly 1,000 people is really exciting. And it might not just be 900 people. It could be played in a classroom. It could be played a bunch of different places. We're not going to know how many people have heard it, but we're really excited that that has gotten such great response. We also know that it was a great idea because when the Chesapeake Gateways partnership meeting happened, Carla did a session, and her session was full. People wanted to know how this worked and what it looked like. So we're really excited about Carla's leadership in this. For our crisis communications plan, we learned a lot going through the January snowstorm. So we had a draft, and then we learned what was garbage in the draft and what was great. Nothing was garbage, Anna. I'm sorry. But we could adjust from that and what made sense in real time, especially for this kind of weather event. So we have, Anna has taken a lot of that information. She's taken what we've heard from our board, and we'll be updating that. But it was both kind, so thank you to the weather gods for giving us a crisis while we were still in draft mode so that we could figure this out. We also got to exercise our muscle of making sure that we are communicating with the city and the county effectively during that timing, something that we had decided that when the schools went back, even with a two-hour delay, the crisis was over. And because we needed an end to the crisis, the county parks weren't open yet, so we still had a banner on our website that said the county parks weren't open yet. Athena, I hope you wouldn't mind, but businesses are open, so please make sure that you are balancing the government communications with the business communications, which was a great point and something that we will continue to strive to do.
Thank you for the quick adjustment.
Yeah, no, it was great feedback. We appreciated it. Anyone want to speak to the crisis communications plan otherwise before I keep going? Okay. Cool.
I think it looks great.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good comprehensive program that should help both from a PR perspective and also helping to keep visitors safe. And I love the work with the hotels, finding rooms for first responders and others. So it's really, I think we must be a bit on the forefront of some of those efforts, which is great.
Yeah, that wasn't something that came up in our competitive analysis, which was largely led by Rory, and it was really hard to find other destinations' crisis plans. They weren't really excited about sharing those with us, which was fine and fair, but we were able to get a hold of several and use them against the draft. So we didn't see this out there. I'm not sure that it is. It could be, but we wouldn't know exactly. So thanks.
Absolutely, thank you.
Boosting sustainable economic growth. Workforce continues to be an issue here, and I know that is felt by the business owners around this table and within the community. And we work really hard with the school system, but specifically with ACTS on the Saver Studios portion of what they do. It's a curriculum that is for high school students who are interested in hospitality and tourism related jobs. They go to Center One, which is essentially across the street. I think, did they go to Center One or were they going to go to Center Two?
They'll be going to Center Two.
Okay. Center Two will come on. I won't get to
it. Ace Academy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ace Academy, thank you. Mm-hmm. All of the things have been rebranded and I can't keep up. But they are... It takes them away from the regular classroom 2 days a week and lets them dive deep into our industry. And so we're trying to support interest in it from the middle schoolers' lens as they're learning about that this is a possible avenue, and then through high school so that we can give them access to compelling opportunities inside of our industry. And it builds on the work that Kathy has been doing with her team to help with job fairs and experiences away from the classroom for those students and get them excited about our industry. That continues to be the biggest lag, at least in my opinion, of the need for our industry and full recovery in this community post-COVID. It was an issue before COVID, but COVID really exacerbated it. So we'll have the Senior Stay Day coming up, which has seniors who come into the job fair in the morning, and then in the afternoon there are same folks, but we have adults who come in for the job fair. If you're interested, see Cassie. And she can connect you to the folks who are putting it on at PVCC. We've been working with the Downtown Mall for their 50th anniversary. We will be hosting lantern-making activities at our Mobile Visitor Center in support of their lantern parade that they'll be putting on July 3rd. Really excited to be working with our arts organizations to bring that to life. And there'll be a presentation to City Council on the 50th coming up the first week in March, which is next week, isn't it? Oh, boy. That Chris is doing on the 50th, and we'll be there in support. Wanted to give you all a breakdown of our CACVB sales results for 2025. The total business sales that came through our department pretty much match our budget. We were able to generate $3 million worth of hotel sales this year, which is really exciting. We gave you some ideas based on the Destinations International's economic impact calculator, what that looks like from restaurant tax perspective, how many FTEs were supported, and this is by, you know, primarily our sales manager's efforts with the greater support of our team, especially with marketing. We also had a paid subscription to Cvent, which is a way of getting requests for proposals directly to us or copying us in on opportunities that go to the hotels so that we have a better chance of success in those being booked here. And that generated a lot of interest and a lot of value as well. So this was really exciting. That's about a $10,000, almost $11,000 investment with, an awarded RFP value of $500,000 nearly. So that's definitely been worth the money. What we learned from these results were that a little more than half the leads that come through our office get booked in market, which is good, but can continue to be better as we refine. This is part of the reason we want to work with the directors of sales to see, you know, are we going after business that they are not as interested in? How can we refine our sales strategy further to have better results? Our tour groups, so people who are traveling in a tour bus to come to Monticello and go to Mickey Tavern and do our regular tour bus activities here, are our number one source of booked leads through our office. That doesn't mean everywhere, but through our office. And those groups usually stay at our economy or mid-scale properties. Government and association business are interrelated because there are a lot of governmental associations in Virginia that come through here. And then we are seeing an emergence of health, medical, and pharmaceutical leads coming through but are not often booked. I think this is maybe part of the AstraZeneca conversation and has to do with our two hospitals. It's something that we're looking about into maybe investing a little bit more in trying to identify those medical conferences where we can show up as we have the facilities and the business community here to book them. The primary reason for any meeting planner not booking business was location, a high average daily rate, a lack of meeting space, or a lack of response from qualified hotels. We only really have 5 qualified hotels for most of the conference space that comes through. And so if those hotels are booked, that means that we can't book that, which is, you know, it's reality.
Well, what are those 5?
Yeah.
I know it's Omni,
Horsehead, Keswick.
Okay. Yes. The Forum, Omni, Doubletree, Keswick, Forum, who am I? Boar's Head. The Holiday Inn to a limited extent.
Okay.
Yes.
And the guest house coming on.
So all of this research is leading up to the guest house opening so that we have baseline data to see how the guest house impacts the hotel industry here. So hopefully when it opens, we'll have an idea of, you know, have things change, because that's the single biggest reason why things might change that we can anticipate at this moment in time. Any questions about any of that?
I have a lot of questions, but maybe I can ask you offline.
Absolutely. Is there any question that you'd want the whole board to hear a response to?
I'm curious, with the RFPs that are coming specifically through CVent, that understanding that Teresa's presence at trade shows and, you know, furthering the development of the understanding of what Charlottesville can do is certainly part of the job that she generates for us, but what is like the booking window of the leads that we're seeing come through? I ask that because I would think that the large programs that would really generate a lot of revenue for our businesses have a really long lead time. And is there anything that we might do specifically through that CVent platform that would further generate the lead volume of the programs that we might have better opportunity to win?
Yes. I can't tell you specifically CVent versus the rest, so I would need to get with Teresa to give you a response to that. It has been a habit of the hotels here that if the booking window is outside of a year to 18 months and it's further away than that, we often lose that business. Our hotels are not ready to book business 2, 3, 4 years in advance. That's not uniform with everybody, but often that's the case. We're told frequently, you know, we're waiting for UVA football schedule to come out. We're not going to book anything in the fall until we know the schedule for the football season. So there's missed opportunity from not being able to book out with a further window. Yes. Cool. Yep. And happy to chat.
Courtney, did you get that schedule last week by chance, the fall schedule?
I think we did, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Our hotel occupancy rates have normalized. This is the first year that 2020 is no longer on here. I know. But we are seeing the seasonality that went away a little bit during COVID come back. So fall and spring are stronger than they were. Winter continues to be a slower time for us. And the summer's kind of, as the kids would say, mid. average daily rate continues to go up. I think, you know, we see 2024 and 2025 having a little bit of some push and pull there. The cost of doing business continues to go up, and we have seen a lot of economic disruption in 2025. I imagine we'll continue to see economic disruption this year as well, so we'll see how that,
what would that be from?
I would never, you know, venture a guess. This continues to be something that our hotels need to do, but also something that turns visitors away sometimes because of the cost, and that's a tough balance to strike. And then hotel revenue per available room is how much money our hotels are making from their rooms, and this is pretty consistent with what we were seeing in 2024. Any questions or comments on any of that?
What was that previous slide, Courtney?
Average daily rate is how much they're charging per room. And this is just hotels and just hotels that report to CoStar, which is most hotels that are in our community, but not maybe some of the little tiny B&Bs and things like that. We also got an AirDNA subscription last year, so I have more slides than you're going to want to see, but I wanted to be thorough in the information I was giving you, so I will do a highlights reel of this quickly. But AirDNA scrapes the internet for data on short-term rentals, which are, the county calls them homestays, they're Airbnb, VRBO, Stay Charlottesville also is included because you asked that specifically, and other small rentals. So what we saw this year is that, you know, we make about $32 million from the short-term rentals. The average daily rate is a little bit higher than our hotels at $214, but keep in mind that a short-term rental could be somebody's, like, garage room, like, room above their garage. It could be a mansion, like, out in Keswick. There's a wide variety of what short-term rentals look like. The revenue per available room is $122, so that's what they're making per room. We have 861 listings available. We got a list of those listings to share with the city and the county when we signed on for this. We don't continue to get those. We got it one time so that they could see what we had access to, and a lower occupancy rate than what our hotels see. This chart just kind of shows that we have a lot of seasonality here as well, and that we've seen an uptick in short-term rental revenue since 2016, which is when it started. The localities have also gone through some different zoning applications for short-term rentals, so some of that might be reflected here as well. This is all together. This is the city and the county together. We didn't separate them out. These are what make up our short-term rentals. So studio, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom, all the way up to six-plus. So you have an idea of what that looks like from 2 years ago, the previous year, and the current year. So this is how much revenue is trending by bedroom. The one to two bedrooms are at the highest, which means that they are also competing directly with our hotel properties. The how much revenue is trending by tier, we're seeing a lot of luxury.
Wow.
Yes. So we're pretty flat on budget economy, mid-scale, and upscale, but luxury is bringing in a lot of revenue and certainly trending up.
And what's considered luxury? Like, how do you define that?
I would have to get back to you with a great definition, but most of our hotel properties are tiered by kind of star rating, and that they're checkboxes, and I'm sure our hoteliers can speak better to it than I can. There's a similar rating system for short-term rentals.
It'd be the equivalent of a five-star, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
They're just the, like, LaForge in Keswick.
Yes,
and
right.
Lovely, historic. Large room. I forget how many
rooms.
Wedding parties will book a home as opposed to booking five rooms in a hotel, so that they're all there.
And it could include a concierge, it could include a private chef. There are all sorts of services that you can purchase in the area that can help make that up.
That's what Street's doing with their property, that would truly. It comes with a private chef, so you do have to.
Well, I got to get that one.
And the length of short term matches what?
In order to generate transient occupancy tax, it's less than 30 days. They can stay as long as the localities have rules for, and I'm not sure that they have rules necessarily around it. I feel like maybe the county does.
29 days. You can check out, but you can leave and check back in, but you have to leave on the 29th. But it has a specific. You can't stay beyond.
I know that during COVID, people were coming here and spending multiple months in the same.
That was different.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at that to see exactly.
We have restrictions in the county.
That's good. Yeah. Because something that has been in the city and the county representatives can speak to this more than I can. An area of conflict is it replacing housing?
I will give you one example of someone I know. She had a separate little cottage. She was renting that out. And then she's, you know, yearly rental, so someone could live there and not a lot of money. And then she started doing the Airbnb, and she was getting, at that time, this is maybe 5, 7, 8 years ago, it was like $30,000 a year, as opposed to renting it out to someone for a year. So, yes, it is affecting that, and we look at those closely, but it is affecting available long-term rentals for people, you know, lower income or lower cost. That's a problem.
It's just less than 30 consecutive days.
Mm. There you go. Thanks. So that matches with what triggers the transient occupancy tax as well. So if somebody stays at a hotel for 30 days, that no longer goes into the transient occupancy tax. So that doesn't come back to our organization. So we don't want people spending more than 29 days here at one time. We want them to go home and come back the next day and then spend another 29 days here. So one of the questions I had before we had access to this data was how much rental availability listings do we have all the time? Like, were rooms coming available because we were trying to increase room inventory during UVA football weekend or graduate or finals weekend, and did it kind of go away in the winter so that our primary folks, our visitors would primarily be booking hotels? You'll see that there is some seasonality here, but maybe not as much as we would hope for. But that just means they are available. It doesn't mean they're getting booked. But people are largely not necessarily taking their availability away, although this is around 15,000 all the way up to probably what is closer to 40,000. So there is still a decent amount of variability. I do have the numbers for these charts. This was an easier way to look at it, but if somebody wanted to dig in more, I have the spreadsheets that go with them. And then how much revenue do vacation rentals generate in your market? This is very seasonal, and that's not surprising that October and May are the primary bumps. That's what we see all the time. How many available listing nights are there by bedroom? Again, one bedroom is the majority of them, so it's likely directly competing with our hotel properties. How much revenue did listings earn by day of the week? This is very similar to what we see with hotels as well. Friday and Saturday nights do the best. Occupancy rate by day of the week, a very similar chart. Nightly rates by bedroom. So this is anywhere from one bedroom being at $122 a night up to six plus bedrooms at $1,300 a night. So a big jump there. It gives you an idea of price point. Average booking lead time in your destination is kind of all over the place, which is interesting. We find that, at least in my time here, bookings from D.C. are really weather dependent. They wait till the last possible second to try and book a nice weekend if they want to or not. They don't. And then folks who are coming from further away tend to book further out. This is a future pacing for the same period last year. It's down a little bit once we get into May and June, but it was really still strong for March and April. This just could be because consumer confidence as a whole is still low, and so that would be my guess at this point unless we see this trend continue. All right, any questions about short-term rental data? Critical business imperatives are what our team calls the things that we do regardless of the strategic plan. So some things are related to strategic planning and moving us forward, and some things just keep having to happen, like answering our phones and emails. So our visitor services updates, we have our numbers for our mobile visitor center schedule for the year. We had a great increase of 6% year over year, which was exciting. We see brochure distribution ahead of visitation, primarily coming from Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and New Jersey. Our visitor services team manages over 100 inventory items, and the team will be attending the visitor services seminar coming up in March. But they, I'm not sure it's here, but it was in our team's presentation last week. We have to prepare these materials in advance, but we saw a lot of special event participation. We took on fewer special events, but more high-volume special events last year, and really saw a great return on that. So I'm really excited to see that continue, and it's something that our special events really appreciate us being there, because not only are we giving out visitor information, we're often telling people where the bathroom is and how to get around the actual event, and so we're almost an extension of the team who is in place, which is helping enhance the experience for everybody who's attending the event, which is really
and
great.
Where is the seminar in March? Location?
I don't know.
Fredericksburg, I believe.
I think you're right. Yes.
It changes year every year.
Right.
What were some examples of those special events? Like, what do you mean by that?
Crozet Arts and Crafts Festival. Yeah. We had been doing one day of the weekend. We chose to do 2 days both weekends because of the volume of people we were able to talk to and how many of those people happen to be visitors. We go to the Grand Illumination. We do the Winter Wander.
We'll do Winter Wander a few nights. We'll do some UDA events. We did the Winter's Brew Festival out in Crozet. We've done, we would have typically done UBA tailgates at the Alumni Hall, but because that's under construction, that's one that we missed out this year. But that, to Courtney's point, gave us capacity to have team members at high volume events for a longer period of time. We try and do a balance of both city and county events, so if there are events like at Ix Art Park, we'll try and attend those, and then we try and be aware of the type of events that we go to so that we're not all at wine events or all at arts events. We're trying to at least get a little bit of a variety in there.
Yeah, and we try and make sure that we're showing up for a primarily drinking event, that we are still going to be useful and not just fill in the blank. we take the kind of event into consideration as well, and the visitor experience of an interaction. Any other questions?
Do you have plans to be at the NCAA?
We were going to be when there was a community event, which was called, Anna had told us what it was.
We've been in talks with Anna from UVA Athletics about their plans for sort of visitor ticket holder events, and we're going to hear a overview from her tomorrow, but we'll continue our conversation with her. If there is a public-facing event that our team can go to, we would like to be there.
Okay.
We think it makes great sense. I just know that their plans of what they had originally envisioned have changed so far, and so we will have a meeting set up, I think, in March. We have to connect with her.
Perfect. Yeah. Right. Destination development updates. Our team helped secure $110,300 in grant funding for our partners in fiscal year 2026. This really helps our partners be able to augment their message to visitors. That's primarily through Virginia Tourism Corporation, but not exclusively. We go after Virginia Tourism grants sparingly so that we are not competing with our local partners, unless it's something that we really feel like we need money for. We are going to go after one this spring, fingers crossed, so we'll see how that works. But this is really exciting. This number continues to be more and more impactful over time. We also provide a lot of letters of support, and so that really helps our applicants from the business standpoint, the nonprofit standpoint, but also from the government when they're going after grants for different things that might impact tourism. We have approved over 700 calendar events for the website, so our event listings are some of the most visited pages on our website, so showing up as an event was really great. Do you have a question you want?
No, I was just asking if, you know, I didn't know about the Monticello Wine Trails Industry Tasting Event.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks ago on Monday?
Yeah.
And it was something that we had a booth at to chat with people. No member of the CACBB had any wine, just for the record. Sadly, we were invited by many people to have their wine. But it was during the day on a Monday, so we didn't want to have it be a bad look. But it was a great opportunity. What was exciting about it is it's something that our team has been working towards for a long time, which is have the restaurateurs talk to the wineries and have them have a business relationship that when visitors come to town, they expect that they can go out to a winery and then find local wine in the restaurants when they go out to dinner that night, and that often doesn't happen. And so it was really great to see those two industries get together and be part of the team that supports those efforts.
And that doesn't happen because of the price of the wine. They have to go through a middleman, so to speak, or a middle person, and the local wines end up being more expensive than...
That's the perception.
Pardon?
I think that's the perception, but not necessarily.
No, I spoke with the restaurant people.
Right.
Yeah.
No, what I mean is that
okay.
that there are a lot of, that's true that there are a lot of Virginia wines that are wholesaling, you know, in the $20 range, right, which is too expensive for a lot of the restaurants. But there are also a lot of wineries that have crafted programs to get the wine, to wholesale the wine at prices that actually match what the restaurant will be paying for, like buy the glass wines, whereas the way that typically works is they'll spend what they're going to charge for a glass of wine. That's what they'll, the wine they're going to purchase by the bottle has to be the price of one glass. And there are a lot of wineries that are, well not a lot, but there are Virginia wineries in this region that are priced to do that. But I think some of it is a lot of the restaurants have the perception that that's not available.
How do we change that? Because that would be great to have local wines.
That event was one really good opportunity. We talked with restaurants coming through, and we specifically had our buy-the-glass offerings there, and there were a lot of like, oh, okay. But it's still tough because they do have the regular distributors. They do. That doesn't mean they can't get California wines cheaper. But we can meet their needs, and there is this additional benefit of, you know, of what Courtney is saying, that, you know, people, visitors are looking for, they want to see Virginia products.
Yeah. Well, you've already said this, but I think the other piece of it is that there's reps from the distributors that are going out, and their job is to sell non-local wine into those restaurants.
Yeah.
The local wineries don't have dedicated salespeople out repping their products. So unless the winemakers themselves actually go out and make those connections, it just doesn't happen as often.
It's a lot of work.
There's a lot of...
Yeah, do they know they can do that, the local wineries?
They know they can.
It just depends on the size of the winery, whether they're able to do that. Some of the smaller, mom and pop wineries, are their business model is really just to sell from the tasting room.
Right, right.
But there's certainly a dozen, at least, that are focused on... in this region really focused on trying to do that. And they don't necessarily have full-time reps, but they do have people making a concerted effort. And the Monticello Wine Trail, we're continuing to work on ideas also to just bring more awareness to wines that are available to wholesale for buy-the-glass programs. And we're seeing some success. I think that, across some of the wineries are seeing some success. And I think the more we raise the issue, I think we've definitely seen more restaurants looking and at least asking the question, like, can you meet these kind of requirements that they have? So there's a lot of work to be done. There's so much opportunity. Because I think Virginia Wine is something like 6%. We have something like 6% of the market share. And so there's a lot of opportunity.
In the state or anywhere.
In the state.
Of Virginia wine sold, we only have 6% coming from Virginia.
Of wine sold in Virginia, Virginia wine is 6%.
Wow.
So, which is really sad, right, for such a big wine region. Mm. So, so there's a lot of opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you
for the share.
For Virginia wine? No, it's got to be
very low. Less than 6%.
Yeah.
Probably could be.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Anna and her team have been hard at work redesigning our visitor guide. If you'd like a copy, let us know on the way out. We are happy to give you one. It looks great. It's a little bit lighter than it's been in the past, maybe significantly lighter. It folds a lot better, and it directs people to our website with QR codes to have better engagement to our website so that we're able to track that, which is great. Website is now rebranded as well. We'll be doing the bigger overhaul that I mentioned earlier today, but at least it has the logo and the colors and the fonts and everything of the current brand. And we have been purchasing promotional items, many of which Bea has in her possession and showed off earlier, so that we have things to give away. So that's been really fun. Fuse Ideas is our marketing agency. They're working on new ad creative. I'll show you some of that in a minute. Our marketing team presented on the rebrand. I feel like that was in January.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was great for our partners to be able to engage on it. She'll also do a session tomorrow at Tourism for All so the partners can understand how we'd love for them to engage with our rebrand, how they can send us photos so that we can use them in advertisements and all of that so that we can have a stronger ecosystem here for promotion. And then also distributed our What's New press release, which always gets a lot of pickup and excitement. And this year we also got local coverage of it, which was exciting. So that's great. Here is a paid ad concept that I'm not sure that this particular one is this one out necessarily?
No, this is a two-page spread, so it's an example of what a print two-page spread could look like.
Great. And these are one-page ads. Yes?
Yep.
Great. Thank you. This is probably in the notes that I'm not looking at.
It's okay.
And then this is a website ad, so you would see rotate through the frames of the text appearing and disappearing. And then that is the end of our paid media campaign. But we have ads running. We'll look forward to reporting back to the board on how all of that's being received and the results of that later on in a future board meeting. So really excited about it. Any questions about marketing and PR? Okay. Almost there, guys. Our sales updates, Teresa is not here because she's out going and selling us on the road as usual. She was really busy in the past couple of months attending all of these meetings. ABA Marketplace in Reno is a huge one. 36 appointments is a lot over the course of 2 days. And we are requested far more than our competitors are. Teresa consistently is asked to meet with anywhere from 5 to 10 more planners than, you know, our folks who are in other unnamed cities on the public record. Happy to share those with you off the public record. The partner meetings and visits, we have we hosted some people here who will hopefully bring us some business, which is exciting. We also toured the Virginia Guest House. I think that was also a meeting. I was going to say, we did that on my birthday, which was in December, and that was really fun. And then had a site visit from Liberty Tours and distributed 15 new RFPs. So that is my presentation.
Thank you. Lots of information. Lots of good information.
Lots of information.
Yeah. We're now at the public comment opportunity. Would anyone like to, from the public, like to speak?
The public has no comment.
Thank you. any board announcements? Yes.
I wanted to mention that Wine Week is coming up. It's been the dates have been identified as June 25th through 28th, and I'll send more information, and we'll start getting some stuff. Some of the basics are on the Monticello Wine Trails homepage, but that's going to be a big event. We're working with, we've been talking to a number of hotels looking for sponsors and places to host the Monticello Cup celebration. but there'll be events throughout those days.
So it's the date again?
June 25th through 28th. We're in the final planning stages now, so details will be quickly forthcoming.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The last time I ever have to mention it, but Southern Living Idea House right now. Yeah. We have 15,000 visitors.
Wow.
Average, the majority were from Virginia, but outside of this area. We had all 50 states, 3 foreign countries, minimum 2-day stay, all levels of stay. There were people that stayed at Fort Sask, people that stayed all over town. And the best part of Southern Living Idea House were the 3 charitable partners in total received over $200,000.
Right.
I think that it's probably been announced here, but the Downtown Mall is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and this summer, July the 3rd and 4th, there's going to be a lot of activities planned in the downtown area on the mall. And you know, you had mentioned the wine weekend.
Wine week.
Anyway, so it's going to be a lot of, we're going to be doing a lot of promotion of things that's going around there, and the 250th anniversary. So that whole kind of weekend is going to be a lot going on in this area. So told the missus we can't plan any vacations around that time. I have to be around. So, so any other announcements? Okay, so if not, can I get a motion to adjourn? Second? All in favor, please stand up. No, say yes. Thank you.